TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
Welcome to TV Bible Study. As has already been said, we're in the midst of a study that's trying to make plain what the Bible has to say to man. We're studying Hebrew history, the history of the Hebrew nation. The study is from the book of Joshua through the book of Nehemiah. Our particular area right now is the divided kingdom, and we're in the very last period of Israel, the northern nation's history. Anarchy is now to set in, and finally, that anarchy, that period of no rule, will end Israel's time, and Israel will be buried. I want you to look at a chart that will show you the kings of Judah and Israel. Really, only two kings in Judah are of importance during this particular segment. Jotham, who reigned 16 years, and his son Ahaz, who reigned 16 years. Ahaz's son Hezekiah reigned for 29 years, but only six of them in this period. So we'll discuss him in the next biblical section. During that same period of time, there are five kings in Israel and four dynasties. Shallum, if you remember from our study last time, slew Zechariah, the last son of Jehu, and he reigned only 1 month. Menahem killed him and reigned 10 years. Menahem's son, Pekahiah, reigned for 2 years and was killed by Pekah, who reigned 20 years and was killed by Hoshea. So there are really four dynasties during this period of time. Shallum, Menahem, Pekah, and Hoshea. It is a period where men are making themselves king by the slaughtering of the king. If you want to be king, just get enough followers, kill the king, and sit on the throne. It is a period of no rule. Now let's look at those kings one at a time. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 15, verses 13 through 16, and read with me the story of Shallum. Shallum, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned the space of a month in Samaria. Verse 14. And Menahem, the son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and smote Shallum, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria and slew him, and reigned in his stead. Notice, Menahem killed Shallum and made himself king. Now the rest of the acts of Shallum and his conspiracy which he made, the whole they're written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. I'd like to have that book. I got the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah, and I love it. I think I'd like to have the book, the Chronicles of the King of Israel. Now Shallum's reign begins there in verse 16. Menahem's reign begins in verse 16. And I want you to notice the 3 points in Menahem's reign in 2 Kings 15, 16 through verse 22. In the first place, he slew Shallum. In the second place, he was cruel in war. And in the third place, he paid tribute to Pul, P-U-L, who's also Tiglath-Pileser IV. But Pul is easier to spell than Tiglath-Pileser IV, and so we're going to call him Pul, as he's called here. Now read it with me, starting verse 16. 2 Kings 15. Then Menahem smote Tibshah and all that were therein, and the borders thereof from Tirzah, because they opened not to him, because they didn't recognize him as king. Therefore he smote it, and all the women therein that were with child he ripped up. Now that's a good strategy. It's unnecessary cruelty in war, and for that he'll be judged. But that's a good strategy, because if you don't do that, those mothers will raise their children to hate you. There was a king in South Africa years and years ago who committed fornication with one of the ladies of the village, and she sent a message and told the king that she was with child. And the king sent a message to her and says it's Chaka, which is Zulu for beetle. He says it's a beetle. It's crawled up in you and died, and now you're swelling up. Well, she named her son Chaka and told him the story every day of his life. If you know the history of South Africa, you know that Chaka became the great general that wiped out all of the white men in Southern Africa because he never forgot what his mother told him. And so really what Menahem is doing is making sure he's not defeated. But it's unnecessary cruelty in war, and because of that, he'll be judged. And then he pays tribute to Pul, beginning in verse 17. In the 39th year of Azariah, that's Uzziah, king of Judah, began Menahem, the son of Gadai, to reign over Israel, and he reigned 10 years in Samaria. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Now, you remember? We've said 24 times in 1 and 2 Kings, you'll find those words. He walked in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Verse 19. Get it now. 19. There came against the land Pul, the king of Assyria. And Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver. That's a little over $20 million. That his hand might be with him to confirm the kingdom in his hand. And Menahem exacted the money of Israel, even all the mighty men of wealth, each man gave 50 shekels of silver to give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and stayed not in the land. Now, what's he going to do? Coming back. I mean, you give a guy silver to go away, once he spent that silver, what's he going to do? He's coming back. He's coming back after all the silver. Menahem is a weak, wicked, weakly king. While his son Pekahiah begins to reign in verse 23 of 2 Kings 15. And really, all we need to remember about Pekahiah is he's slain by Pekah. But let's read of that. In the 50th year of Azariah, that's Uzziah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned 2 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel sin. But that's all we know about his personal character, was that he, like his father, and like all the kings of Israel, was wicked. Notice, though, verse 25, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his captain. It's amazing how many captains of kings kill him and become king. His captain conspired against him, smote him in Samaria and the castle of the king's house with Argob and Aria, and with him were 50 men of the Gileadites, and he slew him and reigned in his stead. Now the rest of the acts of Pekahiah, are they not, and all that he did, behold, they're written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. So now we have the second dynasty of this period gone. Shallum is dead, Pekahiah is dead, so Menahem's dynasty is over. Reading on, in verse 27, Pekah now becomes king. In the 52nd year of Azariah, Uzziah is still ruling. Jotham has not even yet begun to reign in actuality. But now Uzziah is a leper. He's shut up in his own house. And Jotham sits on the throne and rules Israel. So Jotham's the ruling king. Uzziah is the real king. In the 52nd year, last year, the year of Uzziah's death, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, began to reign over Israel and Samaria and reigned 20 years. He did that which was evil. Doesn't that get redundant? He did that was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Now, Pekah will remember two things. We'll remember that he allied with Syria, the king of reason, against Pul. Rather than paying tribute, he allied with Syria to fight Pul. Or as he's called also, Tiglath-Pileser here. But that's hard to spell, so we're going to still call him Pul. And he warred with Ahaz, the king of Judah, because he wouldn't join the alliance. So Pekah is a powerful man, militarily, politically. And Ahaz, we're going to find out, is a weak king. Read with me, starting in verse 29, 1 Kings 15. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, came Tiglath-Pileser, that's Pul, king of Assyria, and he took several cities, Ijon, Abel-Meth-Makkah, Genoa, Kadesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, and all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria. So here is the first time that there's been a strong Assyrian king come and defeat Israel. Notice verse 30. Here's the end. Here is going to be the end of Pekah. And Hoshea, the son of Elah, made a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and smote him and slew him, and reigned in his stead in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. How come I have Jotham ruling over here only 16 years when this text says in the 20th year of his reign? How come? Well, you see, he reigned a long time co-regent with his father. This is literally the fourth year of his reign alone. He reigned 32 years altogether. He reigned 16 years with his father. He reigned 16 years of his own and shared the last 8 of those with Ahaz. So there's really only 8 years that he rules all by himself. He ruled 16 years of his father's sickness. He ruled 8 years by himself, and he ruled co-regency with his son Ahaz for 8 years. And that takes care of another one of those alleged discrepancies. Now, to read of Pekah's war with Ahaz, you have to read 2 Chronicles chapter 26 or the book of Isaiah. Either place will tell you of the fact that Ahaz refused to join the alliance that Pekah and Rezin made against Pul or Tiglath-Pileser. Now, he didn't do that because he trusted God. He did that because he didn't know what to do. He absolutely didn't know how to make a decision. He didn't know whether to trust Assyria. He didn't know whether to trust that alliance. He didn't know whether to trust Egypt. He knew he wasn't going to trust God. I mean, that's the only thing Ahaz knew. He wasn't going to trust the Lord. So because of that, he was a weak king that finally had to be judged. His son Hezekiah wouldn't trust Assyria, wouldn't trust Egypt, didn't trust God. Ahaz lost, Hezekiah won. Again, the Bible's trying to tell us who to trust. Pekah made an alliance with Rezin against Pul, and it was successful. Pul did not defeat him. He warred with Ahaz. It wasn't successful. It was a draw. Hoshea killed him. All right, now, we've already picked up the fact that Jotham is now reigning because Hoshea begins to reign or kills Pekah in the 20th year of Jotham's reign, which is the 4th year of his reign alone. So let's turn over to 2 Chronicles 27, and let's look at the life of Jotham. Now, Jotham's a good king. Jotham is a good king. 2 Chronicles chapter 27. Let's start reading with verse 1. Turn over there. Let's read it together. Jotham was 25 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. And he did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Howbeit, he entered not into the temple of Jehovah, but the people did yet corruptly. It's too late to change the people. That's a tragedy, but it's true. Hezekiah will make a great reformation, but he'll not be able to change the people. Josiah, will make even a greater reformation, but he's not able to change the people. There reaches a time that individuals can be saved, but a nation cannot. So all God will be able to do by the good ministry of Jotham, by the good ministry of Hezekiah, who will come later, by the good ministry of Josiah, by the ministry of all the prophets that will preach to Judah, Micah and Isaiah and Jeremiah and all the prophets, the only thing he'll be able to do is save a remnant. He'll not be able to save the nation. I pray every day that America has not reached that place. All right, of Jotham, we'll remember 3 things. We'll remember, number 1, that he's a good king in verses 1 and 2. We'll remember that he's a great builder in verses 3 and 4. And we'll remember that he's an excellent, victorious warrior in verses 5 to 9. Nothing bad about Jotham. He's a good king. He's a great builder. He's an excellent warrior. Look at him being a good king. We've already read it, but let's read again, verse 2. He did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah. He didn't go into the temple of the Lord. Look at his building in verse 3 and 4. He built the upper gate of the house of Jehovah. And on the wall of Orphel he built much. Verse 4, moreover, he built cities in the hill country of Judah. And in the forest, he built castles and towers. He rebuilt Jerusalem. And he built, and his army, when it says built, you mean fortified. He built castles and towers in all of the cities, in all the villages, even in the forest, out where there's not very many people. He fortified his country against the onslaught of the Assyrian army that is to come. Jotham is a good king. In the next chapter, 2 Chronicles 28, he is followed by Ahaz. Now we'll remember 3 points about Ahaz. I emphasize the Z because sometimes Bible students have a difficulty in Ahab and in Ahaz. If you'll just remember, Ahab came first because B comes before Z and the wicked preceded the righteous, you've got the way to remember. Ahab, the king of Israel, came first and was wicked. Ahaz, the king of Judah, came after him and was wicked. They were both wicked kings. In chapter 28, we'll see three things about Ahaz. He was a weak king, a foolish builder, and a cowardly warrior. I mean, if there ever was a marked contrast between father and son, here it is. Jotham was a good king. Ahaz a weak, wicked king. Jotham was a great builder. Ahaz a stupid, foolish builder of idol temples. Jotham was an excellent, victorious warrior. Ahaz was a cowardly, defeated warrior. Good fathers don't always beget good sons. And Jotham raised this boy correctly. Everything Jotham could do, he did. The Bible doesn't rebuke Jotham for not raising him correctly. Evidently, Ahaz just got involved with companions and things he shouldn't have. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. I don't blame Jesus for losing Judas. I don't blame Paul for losing Demas. And I don't blame Joseph for losing Ahaz. Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign. Read with me in chapter 28, verse 1. Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, like David his father. But he walked in the ways of the king of Israel and made also molten images under Balaam. That covers both the point that he's a weak king and he built idol temples. He wasn't like Joseph. He didn't learn from his father. I don't know why he resented what his father did. I don't know why he became immoral. There's no reason in the text to say why at all. The text reports the facts. The fact is that a good father begat a wicked son. And by the way, who's Ahaz's son? Hezekiah, the second greatest king Israel ever had, or the third greatest king that Israel ever had. So can a wicked father have a good son? So right there in a row, you got a good father Jotham with a bad son Ahaz. Then you got a bad father Ahaz with a good son Hezekiah. Then you'll have a good son, good father Hezekiah with a bad son Manasseh. You see, goodness is not in the genes. Goodness is not in heredity. Goodness is in whether or not each individual chooses to follow the way and the will of God. So here's a man who is a weak king and a cowardly war and built idols temple. Look at verse 3 and 4. Moreover, he burnt incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom and burnt his children in the fire. That means he sacrificed them. He sacrificed his children. Burn them alive, according to the abomination of the nations whom Jehovah cast out for the children of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense in the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. It was as if he was trying to be as bad as his father was good. It was as if he's trying to stamp out the very memory and smell of Jehovah. Ahaz is one of the most wicked kings Israel ever saw. Judah ever saw. Starting in verse 5. Going all the way through the end of the chapter, you find out that he's also a very cowardly warrior. We're not going to take the time to read all of this, but he makes an alliance with Assyria. Ahaz strikes hands with the king of Assyria and pays him tribute, Tiglath-Pileser. Cool. Look at verse, if you will, look at verse 16 beginning. At that time, did King Ahaz send unto the king of Assyria to help him. For again, the Edomites had come and smitten Judah and carried away captives. And we studied earlier. Let's stop reading there for a minute. We'll come back and read verse 18. We studied earlier the covenant of blessing and cursing in Deuteronomy 28, 29, and 30. God said, when you get in the land, if you do my will, I'll bless you and you'll never lose a war. If you don't do my will, I'll curse you and you'll never win a war. What's happening to Ahaz? He's losing. What should Ahaz know? He's disobedient. He's not pleasing to God. But now notice what he has done. Rather than appealing to God in the time of his defeat, he has appealed to Assyria. Look at verse 19. For Jehovah brought Judah low because of Ahaz, king of Israel. For he had dealt wantonly in Judah and trespassed sore against Jehovah. And Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came unto him and distressed him, but strengthened him not. For Ahaz took away a portion out of the house of Jehovah, and out of the house of the king, and out of the house of the princes, and gave it to the king of Israel, but it helped him not. Now the king won't even accept a bribe. Before he had accepted a bribe and helped him against the Edomites. Now he won't even do that. He said, I don't want to help you anymore. I just want your gold. He'll take his gold, but he won't help him. That's the kind of friends money will buy you. Every time. I mean, the kind of friend that riches and pleasure and prestige will buy you is the kind of friends that when it benefits them more to be against you, will be against you. I want the kind of friends that when I turn the last rock over, there they are. That on the bottom line, when I finally need them, that's where they are. So surely now Ahaz will look up. I mean, surely now Ahaz will turn unto God, won't he? I mean, when he's flat of his back and his last friend has left him and there's nowhere to look but up, surely he'll look up. Start with verse 22, chapter 28. And in the time of his distress, did he trespass yet more against Jehovah, this same king Ahaz. For he sacrificed unto the gods of Damascus, which smote him. And he said, because the God, the king of Assyria, helped them, therefore will I sacrifice unto them, that they may help me. But they were the ruin of him and of all of Israel. Look at verse 24. This guy is a fool. Look at verse 24. And Ahaz gathered together the vessels of the house of God and cut in pieces the vessels of the house of God and shut the doors of the house of Jehovah and made altars in every corner of Jerusalem. He shut the temple and built idols for these dumb no-gods. He's in trouble. Israel is in trouble. The people of God are in trouble. Verse 25, and in every city of Judah he made high places to burn incense unto other gods and provoke the anger of Jehovah, the God of his fathers. Verse 26, now the rest of his acts and all of his ways, first and last, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. Verse 27. And Ahaz slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city, even in Jerusalem, for they brought him not unto the sepulchres of the kings of Israel. The people knew not to bury him with the kings. They buried him in one of his own burial places. He didn't lay down in the sepulchre of David, because he is one immoral man. Oh, I would really like to see God take that kind of hand in the affairs of the nations of the world today. The last king of this period is Hoshea. Turn to 2 Kings 15, verse 30. And Hoshea, the son of Elah, made a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and smote him and slew him and reigned in his stead in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Pekah. And so he reigns here in the place of Pekah. And turn to 2 Kings chapter 17, and we'll see here the reign of Hoshea. In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, began Hoshea, the son of Elah, to reign in Samaria over Israel, and he reigned 9 years. Surprise. He did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, yet not as the kings of Israel were before. He's bad, but he's not as bad as the others have been. So under Hoshea, we'll have 3 points. We'll see that he slew Pekah, he served Assyria, he sought Egypt's help, and therefore was totally destroyed. Look at verse 4 of 2 Kings chapter 17. And the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, for he sent messengers to So. That's an Ethiopian name, which might indicate that the Ethiopians again rule Egypt. He sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and offered no tribute to the king of Assyria as he'd done year by year. Therefore, the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. So he was just the king's vassal. He was a puppet of the king of Assyria. And the first time that he didn't follow Assyria and tried to make an alliance with Egypt, the king of Assyria came and destroyed him. Look at verse 5 and 6. Then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. You know, I don't think you and I understand what kind of a judgment that is. That means for 3 years no food can come in and no messages can go out. And so they, before long, are starving to death. In one of the texts, as we read on here, that happened, and one of the things that happened during the period of time that they're under siege, they begin to eat the children, the little babies in the city. It's such a terrible, dread thing to place a city under siege. But he places the city under siege 3 years. In the 9th year of Hoshea, verse 6, the king of Assyria took Samaria, carried Israel away into Syria, and placed them in Hala, and on the Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the city of the Medes. And it was so because the children of Israel had sinned against Jehovah, their God. Israel is now a destroyed city. Destroyed nation. The year is 721 B.C. They will never be heard from again. During this period of time, four great men prophesied. And if we had time, we'd cover them. We will cover them in TV Bible study when we study the prophets. Amos, Hosea in Israel, Micah and Isaiah in Judah. To a man, they say that Israel is fallen, she shall no more rise. Mark this passage down in your mind and read it. In Amos chapter 5 and verse 1, Amos said, the virgin of Israel is fallen, she shall no more rise. She is cast down upon her land. There's none to raise her up. We studied in a lesson just a few lessons ago about the fact that Ahab and Jezebel had a payday. Ahab in the valley of Naboth's vineyard, and Jezebel in the city of Jezreel. Israel now has paid the price. The price of their sin, the price of their immorality, is the fact that they no longer exist. The 10 tribes are not lost. I can take you to their cemetery. They're buried in Assyria. They're cast down. They are destroyed. They will no more rise. God has a faithful tribe in Judah, and from it a remnant will be preserved, through whom or through which the Messiah will be brought into the world. God's the God of history. He's not just the God of the cathedral. He's not just the God of Israel. He's not just the God of the cross. He's not just the God of the church. He's the God of America. He's the God of Russia. He's the God of all the kingdoms, all the kingdoms of the world. And Israel thought that because they had a temple where they worshiped God, they'd never be destroyed. They trusted in a stronghold that was not strong. I believe today in the country of churches, the United States of America, that we need to learn the lesson that God is not pleased by ritual, but only by right kind of living. Remember that. And God will give you all kind of peace in believing in Jesus.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and his righteousness.
These lessons are available on video cassette tapes for use with video cassette players or TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses. Teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of His Word.